I'm going to be in a little bit of a hurry. I have to my appropriations bill is in committee. It's starting at 10 o'clock this morning. And let me talk about this. Earlier this week, my subcommittee approved the 2014 appropriations bill for labor, health, human services, education, National Institutes of Health, and a lot of other things. And at 10 o'clock this morning, we're marking up the bill in full committee. This accomplishment stands in stark contrast to inaction in the House. To date, there is no sign whatsoever that the Republicans in the House intend to even consider our appropriations bill. This is unfortunate. It carries big consequences. Other than defense, my appropriations bill that covers all covers the Department of Health and Human Services, Department of Education, Department of Labor, the National Institutes of Health, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, and a number of other things. Second only to defense, it's the largest of the appropriations bills. And again, it funds a range of programs essential to middle-class families in Iowa and across the country, everything from Head Start, public education, child care, medical research, Social Security Administration, and hundreds of programs in between. Of course, we all understand why the House Republicans are reluctant to mark up their appropriations bill on this. Egged on by its most extreme Tea Party members, the House cut their bill 26% below the level of the Senate bill. 26% cut. A cut of this magnitude would be profoundly destructive. Well, but having demanded such a massive cut, I think Republicans should have the courage of their convictions. I think they should have a responsibility to mark up their bill and explain to the American people how they plan to achieve such a radical 26% reduction in these programs. Well, the bigger picture here is that we don't have to go down this destructive path demanded by the House Tea Party people. It's not too late for Republicans and Democrats to come together to negotiate a balanced package of spending cuts and revenue increases to bring our deficits under control. You know, I've been saying that for many, many months now. But for that to happen, Democrats need a negotiating partner that believes in balance and good faith compromise. We're still waiting for Republicans in the House to produce a labor HHS appropriations bill. Now, this Friday, I'm going to be in Iowa. I'll tour the Community Health Center in Council Bluffs. Later in the day in Sioux City, I'll address the American Legion and visit Camp High Hopes. On Saturday, I'm touring Main Street Project in Lamar's. And then I'm going to be in Des Moines later in the day for meetings and hopefully a baseball game on Sunday. All right. With that, over to Kay Henderson.
Senator, do you believe the Obama administration has the authority to order a delay in, in the requirement that large businesses offer full-time employees health insurance or face a penalty under the provisions of the Affordable Care Act? And by ordering that delay, do you think that they have handed Republicans an issue with which to browbeat Democrats in 2014?
Taking the second part of your question first, no, I don't think they've given Republicans an opening. I'm here. The Republicans have been doing everything they can to thwart the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. And so to get it to work right, the Obama administration postponed the employer mandate a year. You would think the Republicans would be applauding that. And now they're attacking it. They can't seem to make up their minds whether they want it implemented or not implemented. They just want to oppose it for opposition's sake. The first part of your question has to do with, I think this is the sort of the historic sort of clash between the legislative branch and the executive branch. This is not the first administration, Democrat or Republican, that I have disagreed with in terms of how a law is passed by us and implemented by the administration. This always comes down to interpretations and how people view things. I think it's no secret that I disagree with the administration on this, but I want to make it very clear that even going ahead with it, that this does not in any way mess up what is the single most important part of the Affordable Care Act, and that is the exchanges that will be up and running and getting individuals signed up starting on October 15th of this year. That's going to go ahead. That's a lot more important, quite frankly, in my view, than the employer mandate. If you want to get into that, I could get into a whole thing, Kay, about should we even continue a system in this country of employer-based health insurance? That's another question. That may have been good 50, 60, 70 years ago. I'm not certain that that is a valid model any longer. And so that's for a longer discussion than this. I hope that answers your question. Joe Morton.
Thanks, Senator. I don't know if you saw it. So the one of the reporters brought up your quotes on the delay to Jay Carney the other day, and he replied generally, I believe, that you know critics of the move were being willfully ignorant. Did you see that, and did you think he was referring to you at all, or? More.
Oh, there's a lot of funny things I say. Well, I may be ignorant, but I'm not willfully so. I think people make a mountain out of molehill about what people say and things like that. I have to like Jay Carney. He's a fine, fine guy. As I said earlier to Kay, I said, you know, these are disagreements that we always have between legislative branches and any and administrations. It's not the first time in my 39 years, that I've had that kind of a disagreement. But like I said, I'm sure they've got their legal analysis of why they can do that. Mm-hmm. I may have my legal analysis of why they shouldn't, and that's the murkiness of the water between any legislative branch and the executive branch. But I don't take it personally at all. In fact, I tend to laugh at comments like that. The most important thing, Joe, as I said to you, is the individual mandate and getting the exchanges up and running and getting people who have been denied health insurance all their lives, 30 million Americans out there without any health insurance coverage, people that have pre-existing conditions, people that have been shut out of health care coverage for too long are now going to get that beginning October the 15th. That's the big prize right there. Let's see, where else are we going down here? The next person I got is Dan Looker.
Hi, good morning, Senator. I had two questions. What will happen, if anything, to a split farm bill in the Senate Ag Committee? And also, do you have any sense as to whether or not CFIUS, the Committee on Foreign Investment in the U.S., will consider food as national security? Do you have any idea what's happening with that process on the Smithfield purchase?
Oh, yes. I think
there was a meeting yesterday, and you probably didn't have time.
You're going to have a hearing on that.
The hearing was yesterday. And then there was a meeting with Treasury officials right after that.
Yeah. The Senate Ag Committee is holding a hearing right now? Huh?
They did yesterday.
What? Well, they held a hearing yesterday. I've been so
right. And then they met with Treasury officials right afterwards to discuss how the Committee on Foreign Investment in the U.S. Might evaluate the Smithfield sale to Shengwei.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how to respond to your question on that, Dan.
Well, normally they approve these things in about 30 days, and CFIUS has approved more than 90% of all foreign investments.
If you're asking me how I feel about it, I don't know all the details of it, Dan, on this acquisition. But am I bothered by it? You bet I am bothered by this. And, in fact, I'm bothered by a lot of things that China is doing right now in terms of purchasing things in this country. But, again, I think it ought to be handled in a deliberative manner and not going off. Maybe it's all right. Maybe it'll prove to be a benefit to pork producers in this country. I just don't know all of the details of it right now.
Okay.
But I have concerns about it. The other thing you mentioned was the separation of the farm bill from the food, nutrition aspects of it. I've been on the Ag Committee for 39 years, this has come up repeatedly. I remember when I first came to Congress in the 70s, a lot of people were saying, well, we got to get food stamps, nutrition programs out of the Farm Bill. It became clear to me in my early service on the House Agriculture Committee that you would not be able to pass a Farm Bill but for having those nutrition programs, maybe in the Senate, but never in the House. And so we formed this good coalition. And it's a good coalition because a lot of these feeding programs, let's face it, do a lot to support farm income and at the same time do a lot to help meet the nutritional needs of low-income people in this country. So it's sort of both, everybody sort of benefits from this. Our society benefits from a healthier country. It helps us in terms of health care needs, and it bolsters farm income. Now, I would point out that that I still maintain that position, that they should be together. As a matter of fact, I'm told that over 500 farm groups in this country, over 500 different farm groups, support my position on that.
Mm-hmm.
They want them to kept together. These are farm groups. Want to keep them together.
Do you have any sense of what the Ag Committee may do?
I think they give you some indication of where the farm for where farm country is on this aspect.
Would the Senate Ag Committee conference on two separate bills? Do you have any idea?
Well, you know, if the House if they just want to pass a separate farm bill and they're going to go to conference with us, and of course we have nutrition in our bill, that might make it pretty interesting to see what the House wants to do. Do they just want to cut out all nutrition programs? I mean, that was the big sticking point, is that they cut billions, $21 billion out of it.
Mm-hmm,
we cut
mm-hmm.
four, if I'm not mistaken. That's just not going to fly. That's just not going to fly over here at all, even with Republicans. Tony Lays.
Hi, Senator. What would you say to folks who are now contending that it's unfair to move forward with the individual mandate if the White House is going to delay the employer mandate?
Hello?
Why? I don't understand why it would be unfair. I don't get... Now, that I don't understand why it would be unfair. The employer mandate only covered about... 5% of businesses or something like that? Anyway, a small fraction of businesses. The individual mandate covers, as I said, how many, 30 million people? Something like, who knows? It's huge. I mean, this is the fundamental change in our healthcare law by setting up the exchanges, allowing people to come and get covered by health insurance, to get subsidies for low incomes so that no one's left out. That's, as I said earlier, I think, Tony, I said this is the heart of the whole system. The employer mandate was just sort of one aside. Like I said, I didn't agree with the administration on it, but it's not a dagger to the heart of the Affordable Care Act.
Are you concerned that the administration will be under pressure now to delay other parts of the ACA, including the individual mandate?
Oh, I don't think so. No. You can't do that. If the exchanges aren't there, that would be the most unfair thing of all, if we didn't have the exchanges. Now, that would really be unfair.
But you could have the exchange without the individual mandate.
Say what?
You could have the exchange without the individual mandate.
No, I don't believe so, Tony. I just don't. That would not work. No.
Why?
what are people going to do if you don't have the individual mandate and you don't have people signing up? It's the same old story. People will tend to put off, and then when they get sick, they'll jump on an exchange or try to get insurance as soon as they get sick. Well, you know, it's like car insurance. I've had car insurance all my life. And I don't have wrecks, but I still pay car insurance because I might have a wreck sometime. It's like health insurance. I've been paying health insurance for years, but God's been good to me. I've been very healthy. But I should be paying into health insurance because I might get sick sometime. Something might happen to me. That's why the individual mandate is so vitally important. Joyce Russell.
Yes, Senator. I'd like you to comment on the vote in your committee yesterday on adding gays and lesbians and transgenders to employment discrimination protection. I would like you just to comment on the timing of that. I know that's been out there for several years. One newspaper report called it a perennial, and yet it passed your committee. So comment on that with you, if you would, especially on the timing of it and also prospects for full passage.
Well, I'm very proud of our committee and the Republicans who joined us to pass the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, which would put sexual orientation and gender identity into the same class as sex, religion, race, national origin, disability, so that it's covered by a broad civil rights law. Now, this has been hanging around since 1996. It was the first time I voted on ENDA, as it's called. Then in 2002, it came before our committee. I wasn't chairman at the time. Senator Kennedy was. But we've never been able to get it through. And I'm very proud of our committee. Yesterday, we passed the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, and we picked up three prominent Republicans, Senator Kirk from Illinois, Senator Hatch from Utah, and Senator Murkowski from Alaska. I think with that kind of backing from a more progressive Republican like Senator Kirk to a more conservative Republican like Senator Hatch from Utah, and perhaps a moderate in between, Senator Murkowski, then the Democrats, I believe the prospect for passage on the Senate floor is very good. So I'm just very pleased that we finally are getting past this sort of hurdle that so many people have been discriminated against simply because of their gender identity or their sexual orientation, and that has no place in our society any longer. And I think society has changed. I think society is ahead of Congress on this one. Businesses are doing this already. Businesses are moving ahead around the country. We got a lot of business groups that support the bill. Quite frankly, I think the country is leading the Congress on this one.
Okay, if you don't mind, Senator, just to follow up and then talk a little bit more about the timing. I mean, you said that you've just described the history of this not passing, and yet we had this very significant Supreme Court ruling. Do you think there's some kind of connection between the Supreme Court ruling and the kind of momentum that you've got the wind at your back now and that the court ruling had something to do with that?
Oh, I think that's absolutely true. I think these recent court rulings on gay marriage and things like that, I think has had a great deal with moving us forward. I mean, when states like Iowa, when our Supreme Court decided that, and we found it didn't disrupt our laws in Iowa. People are living with it, and it's no big deal any longer. And no doubt about it. Since 1996, when this first came up, and now a lot has changed in our society for the better. And yes, I believe that the atmosphere, the timing is right now to move ahead with a broad non-discrimination law in employment for people because of their sexual orientation or their gender identity. No doubt about it, the state laws, court cases and others, I think, have brought us a long way, and I think our society has changed a great deal in the last 17 years, and for the better, I might add.